Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to unpack the most critical insights from, well, a whole stack of sources, really, to get you truly well-informed and fast.
That's the plan.
For many, you know, India's tech story, it's long been defined by that global dominance in IT services. Huge sector.
Absolutely.
But today, we're going to explore how that narrative is. Well, it's rapidly expanding. We're seeing a surprising pivot towards becoming a global technology powerhouse in its own right.
Exactly. Our deep dive today, it's going to unpack how India is strategically positioning itself in some really critical and emerging technologies.
So not just services anymore.
No, definitely not. We're talking everything from space exploration, advanced AI, deep tech, and even the really innovative expansion of its drone ecosystem.
Okay.
Our mission really is to pull out the most important insights for you. Looking at India's evolving tech strategy, its achievements, sure, but also the challenges, and its kind of unique approach to innovation. It's all custom tailored so you can get up to speed on this remarkable transformation quickly.
Right. So when we think about India's tech journey, that IT services image, it really sticks. But our sources today, they reveal something, well, far more ambitious, a fundamental shift. It seems like they're moving away from just providing tech services to actually, you know, creating the core technologies themselves. So how did this vision for self-reliance even begin?
Yeah, what's fascinating here is how India's current strategy is really deeply rooted in this vision of self-reliance. You see it encapsulated in initiatives like Make in India and Atmanirbhar Bharat Abhiyan, which means self-reliant India.
Okay, Make in India. I've heard of that one.
Right, launched back in 2014. And these aren't just, you know, aspirational slogans. They are driving concrete policies. Mm. The goal is to drastically boost domestic manufacturing and, crucially, reduce reliance on imports across pretty much every sector.
And that commitment, it's not just words, is it? It's backed by some pretty ambitious goals. Like, wasn't it increasing manufacturing share of GDP to 25% by 2025? That's a substantial economic shift.
It absolutely is. Yeah. And a key tool they're using is the Production-Linked Incentive Scheme, the PLI scheme.
Ah, PLI.
Introduced in 2020. This program basically offers financial incentives to companies that increase their domestic production. It's meant to foster both productivity and, importantly, global competitiveness.
And it covers quite a range, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. 14 crucial sectors. Everything from mobile phones, medical devices, auto components, electronic products. You name it. But it's not just about, you know, building factories. It's a strategic move. They're trying to create sort of economic shock absorbers against global supply chain disruptions.
Hmm. Makes sense. Positioning India as maybe a more resilient manufacturing hub in what's become a pretty volatile world.
Exactly. It uniquely positions them.
So it's definitely more than just simple assembly lines we're talking about here. It's about building an entire advanced manufacturing ecosystem.
Precisely. And there's also a clear push towards more automated process-driven manufacturing, moving towards what people call Industry 4.0.
Industry 4.0, so leveraging automation, AI, Internet of Things, smart factories, basically.
That's the idea, creating factories that can adapt and optimize production in real time. It's key to this shift. And you see initiatives like Samarth Udyog Bharat 4.0 with demonstration centers at top institutions like the IITs, the Indian Institutes of Technology, and ISKITS, the Indian Institute of Science. They're really highlighting this modernization.
So the government's involved there too.
Oh, heavily. There's strategic reforms, tax incentives. They're clearly designed to foster a business-friendly environment, both for startups and established industry. It's fundamentally about shifting India's economic identity.
Okay, so from building that self-reliant base on the ground, let's look up. India's ambitions, they seem to reach for the cosmos. Its space program, led by ISRO, it boasts some genuinely astounding achievements. What are some of the pivotal milestones that really show off this capability?
Right, well, India's space program is, I think, a prime example of both its technological prowess and that commitment to self-reliance we talked about. Yeah. It all kicked off with a foundational vision from Dr. Vikram Sarabhai way back in the 1960s.
The father of the Indian space program.
Exactly. And that led to indigenous development of satellites by 1980. And since then, we've seen incredible milestones. Think of Aryabhata in 1975, India's first satellite, though launched with Soviet help initially.
Okay.
Then there's the PSLV, the Polar Satellite Launch Vehicle. That became their workhorse launcher after its first success in 94. It's renowned for its low-cost missions.
And it's definitely not just low-cost launches, is it? I mean, they're lunar and Mars missions. Hmm. They're truly remarkable. Chandrayaan-1 in 2008, that confirmed water on the moon, right?
It did. A major discovery.
And then Mangalyaan in 2014, India's Mars Orbiter Mission, MOM, That made India the first Asian country and incredibly the first worldwide to reach Mars orbit on its very first attempt. That's just wow.
It really is astonishing.
And of course, the recent success of Chandrayaan-3 in 2023, making India the first nation ever to land near the lunar South Pole.
It's a huge testament to their frugal engineering approach.
Yeah.
India's space strategy, driven by this philosophy, it's not just about being cheap. It's proving that advanced space capabilities don't always require the biggest budgets.
So they're kind of democratizing access.
In a way, yes.
Yeah.
Effectively challenging the traditional space powers on a completely new playing field. And beyond these high-profile missions, remember ISRO launched a record 104 satellites in a single call? Go back in 2017 with the PSLV C-37.
104.
Yep. And they also developed ANAVIC, India's own regional satellite navigation system. Think of it like GPS, but offering more precise, reliable positioning within India and its surrounding areas. That's crucial for things like critical infrastructure and national security.
It sounds like those space sector reforms really opened the floodgates for private companies too, beyond ISRO, who are some of the key private players, the startups, that are really pushing boundaries now.
That's a really crucial point. The space sector reforms of 2020 were, well, transformative. They opened the whole industry up. You've got organizations like INAN Space, that's the Indian National Space Promotion and Authorization Center.
Okay.
They provide regulatory support, financial support, including a pretty substantial venture capital fund, about ours, 1,000 crore, for over 200 active space startups.
So real money going in.
Definitely. And you see it in action. Like the POM program, that's the PSLV Orbital Experimental Module, it carried, I think, 6 startup payloads in 2022, and that jumped to 24 in 2024.
Wow, that's rapid growth.
It is. And you have private companies like Skyroot and Agnikul pioneering their own private launch vehicles. Mm-hmm. Then there are startups like GalaxEye. They're doing fascinating work fusing synthetic aperture radar, or SAR.
Which can see through clouds and at night.
Exactly. Fusing that with traditional optical imagery. It offers unprecedented, like, all-weather surveillance capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, you've got Pixel building hyperspectral satellite constellations.
Hyperspectral? What does that mean exactly?
It means they capture light across hundreds of invisible color bands. This lets them reveal hidden details, think environmental changes, mineral deposits, stuff that conventional satellites just miss entirely.
That's incredible innovation coming from the private sector. But are there potential pitfalls with this rapid privatization or challenges they need to navigate?
Oh, for sure. While the momentum is definitely strong, challenges do remain. There are still early stage funding gaps for some of these really ambitious projects and a bit of a talent shortage, for instance. There's currently only one dedicated Indian Institute of Space Technology, the IIST.
Right.
And global competition is naturally fierce. So the way forward really involves boosting R&D, developing dedicated infrastructure. There's talk of a space industrial corridor fostering global collaboration and ensuring robust tech transfer from ISR to these growing private companies. It's a dynamic period, lots of growth, but definitely not without its hurdles.
Okay, so moving from the cosmos back down to Earth and shaping the digital playing field, India seems to be developing a really unique approach to artificial intelligence, AI. It feels like it's not just about the raw tech power, it's deeply tied into national priorities, societal impact.
Yeah, and this raises a really important question. How does a country with such diverse needs, such scale, balance that rapid AI advancement with responsible governance? India is quite explicitly striving to be the AI leader of the global south.
Right.
And also the use case capital for AI, which basically means prioritizing practical applications that directly benefit its huge population.
Mm.
Historically, you know, India had sort of hesitated on creating overarching national AI regulations.
Mm.
But that shifted in 2023 towards a focus more on user harm prevention. It seems unlikely they'll create a fully centralized AI governance framework, like, say, the EU's Big AI Act.
So, more decentralized. Maybe a more targeted approach that uses existing legal frameworks. I understand they plan to incorporate AI provisions into existing broad tech laws, like the Digital Personal Data Protection Act, the Digital India Act, the Telecoms Bill, governing AI applications sector by sector, maybe, like healthcare, defense.
That seems to be the plan. Governing it sectorally.
Right.
And it also sounds like they'll implement restrictions more reactively,
Around?
Especially when they perceive specific risks emerging.
Okay.
And their national priorities for AI are crystal clear. First, there's prestige. They have aspirations to be a Vishwa guru, a world teacher in tech, leveraging that massive skilled youth population they have.
Makes sense.
Then there's domestic security, integrating AI into surveillance systems, you know, for real-time analysis, law enforcement, facial recognition technologies, FRTs, for example.
Right, though I imagine there are privacy concerns there.
Absolutely. Concerns exist about algorithmic bias, data privacy, especially with exemptions for government agencies and laws like the Digital Personal Data Protection Bill. And perhaps most importantly, there are the developmental priorities. You mentioned scale well. About a quarter of India's population experiences multidimensional poverty.
A huge challenge.
Exactly. So AI is seen as a powerful tool to address these challenges directly.
That's a really powerful motivation. So we're talking about AI focused on agriculture, things like the Sagu Bagu program for chili farming or Bashini for language localization, which is huge in India.
Precisely. And in healthcare, it's about reducing that urban-rural disparity, improving diagnostic precision.
And sustainability, too.
Yes, geared towards sustainability through smart infrastructure, urban planning for a lower carbon footprint.
Mm-hmm.
Financial access is another big one, using AI for fraud detection, risk management, democratizing advisory services, and, of course, education, personalizing learning, preparing a tech-proficient workforce.
They seem to have several advantages for this vision.
They do. Vast data availability is one. Partly from national projects and, frankly, relatively permissive privacy laws historically.
Hmm.
Plus, there's a national data governance policy that facilitates access for AI training.
And their tech infrastructure.
Strong software industry, absolutely. And that robust digital public infrastructure, or DPI, foundational systems like Aadhaar, the biometric ID, and UPI, the instant payment platform. These have enabled rapid digital adoption for hundreds of millions, creating this massive connected user base that's just ripe for AI applications.
A huge built-in market.
Exactly. And they're actively seeking foreign investment for semiconductor manufacturing, over $15 billion approved for three plants just in February 2024. Plus, partnerships with giants like NVIDIA and Meta.
And the sheer size of their STEM workforce seems like a massive advantage. What was it, 34% of graduates in STEM fields in 2021? That's a lot of potential brain power.
It truly is. India boasts the largest STEM workforce globally, and having a large English-speaking pool is also a significant advantage, especially since most large language models are trained primarily in English. However, there are gaps, particularly in high-level machine learning expertise. And retaining top talent, preventing emigration, that's an ongoing challenge. But you can't ignore the crucial role of lower-skilled data labeling jobs either, which are essential for training AI.
Right, that feeds the system.
And the business ecosystem is generally favorable. Those initiatives like Make in India, Digital India, Startup India, they foster investment and indigenous innovation. You see major Indian corporations like Wipro, Tata Group, Reliance Industries, Infosys investing billions in AI.
Okay, so lots of advantages, lots of investment. But what are some of the maybe unforeseen hurdles or the most difficult challenges India is really grappling with as it tries to scale up these AI ambitions?
That's a really crucial question. Despite all the positives, India does face challenges. As we mentioned, limited high-level ML expertise is one. The governance landscape is still somewhat fragmented. R&D funding, while growing, is arguably still inadequate compared to the scale of their ambitions. And there are risks, you know, associated with relying heavily on the private sector to establish ethical norms and standards. Their regulatory focus right now is particularly strong on deepfakes and content moderation, especially sensitive around election time.
Understandable.
The government's even pushing for platforms to potentially face criminal liability, which is quite a strong stance. And importantly, India is prioritizing data localization, keeping data within India, and building population-specific machine learning models, like Bashini, that India-specific large language model aimed at tackling linguistic diversity.
So less focus on general foundational models like GPT-4, maybe?
More focus on becoming the AI use case capital of the world. Tailored solutions for India's specific needs rather than just trying to build the biggest general model.
Interesting strategy. Okay, so if AI is changing everything, then deep tech and quantum computing, they sound like they're poised to redefine it even further. India's commitment here really shows a long-term strategic vision, doesn't it?
Absolutely. What's really fascinating here is India's recognition that true, like, technological supremacy lies in deep tech. These are the areas needing substantial scientific and engineering breakthroughs, not just, you know, incremental improvements on digital platforms.
So define deep tech for us again.
Sure. It basically encompasses technologies based on fundamental science and engineering advances, like AI, quantum computing, advanced materials, bioengineering, even space technology fits under this umbrella. It's characterized by really long R&D cycles. We're talking 5 to 10 years, sometimes more.
High risk, high reward, presumably.
Exactly. High risk, very capital intensive, needs highly specialized talent, and generates strong intellectual property IP.
And India is putting serious money behind this. You mentioned the government approved, what was it, 1 lakh crore. That's roughly $12 billion over 5 years.
A huge sum. And this initiative is specifically designed to foster R&D and, crucially, private sector-led innovation in what they categorize as sunrise sectors.
Like quantum, AI, semiconductors, space, green hydrogen.
Right. And also strategic sectors like defense, cybersecurity, clean energy, and biotech. A really critical aspect of this new policy is its focus on technology readiness levels, TRLs.
TRLs, okay.
Specifically, they're targeting TRLs 6 through 9, which basically means focusing on transitioning research out of the labs and into commercially viable products. This directly tackles a historical weakness in India, actually commercializing that early stage research.
Ah, bridging that valley of death between lab and market. That sounds like a clear signal that the private sector really needs to step up. What role are they expected to play in this deep tech push?
Precisely. India's deep tech ambitions, they know they can't just rely on government labs. You see key players stepping up already. Reliance Jio is building indigenous AI compute infrastructure. Tata has Tata Quantum working on quantum computing. Startups like Sarvam AI are building large language models specifically tailored for India.
So the government's helping them.
Yes, actively offering incentives, co-funding, really trying to encourage this private sector engagement. Because ultimately, this huge investment, it's about national and economic security. It's about reducing dependence on imports, ensuring digital sovereignty, you know, data processed under Indian laws, and building resilience against future crises.
And quantum specifically, they've launched a dedicated mission for that.
They have. The National Quantum Mission, or NQM, approved in April 2023, with a substantial budget over 6,000 crore running through 2031.
And what are the big objectives for this National Quantum Mission? It sounds incredibly ambitious.
It really is. The mission's objectives are pretty significant. They include developing intermediate-scale quantum computers, aiming for 50 to maybe 1,000 physical qubits within 8 years.
Physical qubits, those are the actual building blocks, right?
Yeah,
not the simulated ones.
Exactly. The fundamental units storing quantum information. Reaching that scale is a massive engineering challenge, and it would move India much closer to building quantum computers capable of solving problems that are just intractable for today's best supercomputers.
What else?
They also aim for satellite-based secure quantum communications. Think unhackable communication over 2,000 kilometers within India. And long-distance secure quantum comms with other countries. They're setting up 4 specialized thematic hubs in academic and R&D institutes to drive this forward.
Huge potential impact across many fields.
Definitely. Communication, health, finance, energy, drug design, space. But again, the challenges are there. Talent gaps, funding risks associated with that long ROI, navigating that valley of death between R&D and commercialization, and intense global competition.
Okay, so from the almost invisibly small world of quantum, let's go back up to the skies. India's drone ecosystem seems to be absolutely booming, offering some really incredible solutions to everyday challenges.
Yeah, what's fascinating here is how quickly India has liberalized its drone policy. I mean, really fast. And now reports suggest they're using drones for perhaps the highest number of distinct applications globally, across both civil and defense sectors.
That's quite a turnaround, isn't it? Wasn't there a ban not too long ago?
There was. A blanket ban on civil drones back in October 2014. But that changed drastically, starting around 2021 with the new Drone Rules 2021 and then amendments in 2022. They significantly simplified licenses, training requirements, made it much easier to operate legally.
And they're encouraging local manufacturing, too.
Big time. They liberalized the export of certain civilian drones, those with less than 25-kilometer range and 25-kilogram payload, in June 2023. But crucially, they banned the import of completely built-up drones back in February 2022. That's a clear push to promote domestic manufacturing.
Makes sense with the Make in India theme, but what about managing all these drones in the sky? It sounds like it could get pretty complicated pretty fast.
That's where the Digital Sky Platform, or DSP, comes in. It's designed as a single window online service for everything drone related. regulation, registration, pilot certification, airspace management, even flight tracking.
Okay, a one-stop shop.
Essentially.
Mm.
And what's really impressive, and a huge enabler, is that over 90% of Indian airspace is classified as a green zone. That means drones can operate there without needing prior permission. This rapid liberalization combined with the sheer number of applications, it shows a truly unique adoption strategy.
90% green zone, that really does open things up. So what are some of these 100-plus applications they're actually using drones for across the country?
Oh, the domestic use cases are incredibly diverse. In agriculture, for instance, drones were deployed pretty famously for locust control in Rajasthan back in 2020.
I remember that.
Yeah. And now they're expected to be widely used for pesticide and fertilizer spraying. The projections are for over 10,000 agricultural drones by the end of 2024. This could potentially reduce pesticide use by over 30% and save more than 85% on water usage.
That's a huge impact for farmers.
Absolutely. Yeah. Imagine, you know, a farmer in a remote village, maybe struggling with pests, spraying manually. Now, a drone covers acres in minutes. It's not just tech. It's a fundamental shift in daily life for millions. The government's even offering capital subsidies for what they call Kisan drones, farmer drones, with the prime minister launching the first 100 himself.
That's a direct impact, definitely. And I read about healthcare uses, too, delivering vaccines.
Yes. During the pandemic, drones delivered 300 COVID vaccines to remote villages in Maharashtra in 2021. And now they're used for general medicine delivery. There was the Medicine from the Sky project in Telangana, for example.
Incredible. What else?
Well, beyond that, drones are being used in disaster management, creating high-resolution 3D models for flood risk analysis. In forest conservation, helping combat timber smuggling. Even for public order, like crowd control at massive events like the Kumbh. They've been using them since 2019.
Wow.
And other applications, too. Property mapping under the government's SVAMI TV scheme, monitoring highways, general surveillance, logistics.
Mm-hmm.
The list goes on.
So the industry must be growing rapidly.
It is. Reports suggest over 120 manufacturers, 150 service providers, 50 training schools, and already more than 50,000 certified drone pilots, plus another 10,000 skilled professionals. The government's vision is really ambitious. Make India a global hub for drones by 2030.
A global hub.
That's the aim. And it includes initiatives like training 15,000 women from self-help groups specifically for drone operation and repair. It's a really comprehensive strategy covering regulation, market creation, talent development, the whole package.
Okay, so this entire deep dive, it reveals a really complex, dynamic landscape. But, you know, every ambitious journey has its challenges. India's tech ascent is clearly no different. What are some of the biggest obstacles India still faces in realizing its full technological potential across all these areas?
That's a really critical point to consider as we wrap up. India still faces funding constraints, especially for those really large-scale long-term projects. There's still a reliance on foreign technology for certain advanced components, despite the self-reliance push.
Right.
Their overall R&D investment, while increasing, is still comparatively low compared to, say, other BRICS nations. And there are still some gaps in private sector engagement for certain strategic initiatives, plus sometimes delays in developing critical technologies like the full infrastructure needed for human spaceflight.
So it sounds like they're constantly balancing this strong desire for self-reliance with the practical realities of global collaboration and existing dependencies. How does this play out, particularly in their relationship with major tech players like the U.S.? I know the ICET the Initiative on Critical and Emerging Technology, launched in May 2022, is meant to foster strategic tech partnerships between them.
That ICET initiative is definitely a key area of intersection. And there are complementary strategies. For instance, both countries tend to defer largely to the private sector for AI development. They both participate in forums like the GPAI, the Global Partnership on Artificial Intelligence, trying to harmonize values. Both prioritize digital infrastructure, and both tend to use those sectoral regulations for AI rather than one giant law. And India's relatively relaxed regulatory environment, particularly around data availability for AI training, well, that offers potentially appealing investment opportunities for U.S. businesses.
But I'd imagine there must be friction points, too, despite these shared interests and initiatives like ICT.
Oh, there certainly are. India's quite restrictive approach to content moderation and deepfakes, pushing for that potential criminal liability for platforms we mentioned. That's a really contentious issue with American tech firms, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
Additionally, India's clear desire to build its own AI infrastructure, kind of mirroring its digital public infrastructure success. could potentially displace American businesses that currently dominate cloud and compute services in India. Plus, you always have U.S. export controls on things like supercomputers and dual-use technology, which can create hurdles.
So it's complex.
Very. But it's also a relationship of significant interdependence. U.S. companies heavily rely on Indian labor for IT outsourcing, including crucial tasks like data labeling for AI. And Indian AI developers, in turn, heavily rely on U.S. tech giants for core machine learning elements and compute power. It's a two-way street with potential bumps.
So despite all the shared interests and collaborations, there's definitely a delicate balance to strike as India continues this massive tech transformation. It really feels like a pivotal moment for them on the global stage.
Absolutely. And through all of this, India is very consciously positioning itself as the AI leader of the global South. The aim is to eventually export its AI applications and perhaps its governance model, believing its specific use case-focused approach can genuinely benefit other developing nations.
Interesting. Do people think they can export the tech itself?
Well, there's maybe some skepticism about India's ability to export its own advanced AI technology globally just yet. But there's definitely strong interest both from India and internationally in exporting its successful digital public infrastructure model to other countries. So this dynamic interplay of ambition, indigenous innovation, navigating global partnerships, it's what will truly define their continued rise.
Okay, so we've taken a really deep dive today into India's ambitious journey to become, well, a global technology superpower. We've seen how those foundational policies promoting self-reliance and manufacturing are trying to create, as you put it, economic shock absorbers.
Right.
We've seen how their impressive space milestones, often driven by that frugal engineering, are kind of democratizing access to the cosmos. We've explored India's unique approach to AI governance and application, really focusing on societal benefit for its massive population. We looked at the bold leap into deep tech and quantum computing, which signals a clear move to become a creator of fundamental technologies, not just a user or service provider.
A crucial shift.
And finally, that innovative expansion of its drone ecosystem, which is genuinely revolutionizing everyday life in surprising ways. This really is a story not just of tech advancement, but of a nation leveraging its unique strengths, its scale, its talent pool to drive economic growth, enhance national security, and potentially profoundly improve the lives of its vast population.
It's definitely a complex, multi-layered transformation we're witnessing. It blends that indigenous innovation, that Jugaad or frugal approach sometimes, with very strategic global partnerships. It's showcasing a model of development that's uniquely tailored to India's specific scale and aspirations.
So as India continues down this path, building out its indigenous capabilities, forging these new global partnerships, sometimes navigating tricky waters, it leaves us with a final thought for you, our listener. What new, perhaps unforeseen innovations might emerge from this unique blend, this mix of rapid technological adoption, clear developmental priorities, and that burgeoning dynamic private sector? What could come out of India that might truly change the landscape of technology for everyone, everywhere?